Welcome to WeAreTechnology.com's User-Friendly 2.0 with host Bill Sickens, Technology Architect.
And this is User-Friendly 2.0. I'm your host, Bill Sickens. Joining me are my co-hosts, Bill and Gretchen. Welcome to this week's show.
Hello.
Hi there.
So, Gretchen, I'm going to go ahead and just dive right in. We're going to be doing something a little bit different in our first segment here today, because we've got some really cool stuff that has come up, and we've teased this a little bit earlier on in the year. But for anybody that may not have listened to those shows, the first question I ask is, why not? Why aren't you listening to our shows? But if you haven't, I'll give you the ability to do that a little bit later of how to get to the back episodes. But Gretchen's working on a book called Cyberhawk. And it's the first in a series. Mm-hmm. The first one's kind of an intro to all of this kind of thing. And it's been a work in progress for a while. And Gretchen, you've been writing just in general for all of your life. So, but this is the first one that's getting published, and which is kind of cool. It's going to be available through Amazon and all the normal places to buy books. But it is an interesting topic. So user-friendly, pop culture, technology, and this is a little bit of both, because these type of things are just so absolutely important to keeping literature and everything alive. And when it comes right down to it, if you want to look at the importance of creative endeavors, I would say that a good percentage of our technology now at least was hinted at in shows like Star Trek and Star Wars in the last century, you know, that kind of a thing. So there is definitely a place for this. And getting there has been a journey. This is a family show, so I'm not going to use the word I would normally use to describe that. But it has been a journey with a lot of challenges, let's just say. And getting to that. So we have an interview coming up here with a local writer, local to Oregon here, where we're based out of, named Kay Thompson. She's also publishing a book that has to do with dragons and humans and sounds absolutely amazing. We're going to talk to her here in just a minute. But I thought it would be a cool time to go through the process. So, Gretchen, if you have an author out there, now that you have gotten published, what would you tell them? Like, just a lot of patience?
it's more than patience. I mean, you got to have patience. But there's a lot of luck and connections with the right people. And that's the tough part. Finding those people. We just by luck, actually, no, it was you who was annoying Peter. We got you to do the Wookiee costume. And then for some reason you started annoying poor Peter Mayhew,
and somehow you guys started talking. Chewbacca.
You played Chewbacca.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
I don't want to say annoyed,
but
I certainly was
with him,
asking questions to figure out how to, do certain things. So from that direction, and I think what the real story here is the fact
you have
that,
to make connections with people.
Yeah. And it's important to realize, especially if you get rejection letters and, various other things that happen to a lot of authors, that only a small part of it is really your work.
And yeah, because it's like when I was younger, I went through the trouble of trying to get, putting the book together, printing all the pages, sending it off to, I think it was Del Rey, long time ago. And it's expensive. And you try and get agents and you try and get publishers to read your stuff and they don't.
Yeah.
And so I got to the point where I gave up. I was mostly writing for the fun of it, just for myself. So when I say it was important that we came across Peter, because Peter was, he also did work with publishing and he wrote his own book.
So, I think that being said, and that's why it's important to throw it out there. If you're disappointed, it's probably not because you wrote a bad book. It's all of these other things. And like Gretchen's talking about dealing with Peter or finding somebody in the industry that can help you is really hard to do, sometimes.
Sometimes it's just dumb luck.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I think that's really, really what it comes down to with a lot of these different things. So you've hung in there, and I know you've done a number of different things over the years. And then the other thing that I'm finding to be the case on this, just as I'm learning this myself, is it seems like once you get your first book actually published, it's like establishing credit. After that, it's easier to get other things done. And I'm not going to go into it now because I don't want to hit on anything that we shouldn't talk about publicly yet. But I know, Gretchen, you've got some other stuff out there. I've read some of them. And the bottom line of it is, with all this stuff, is I think you're going to find it easier now to get some of your other books published because you've gotten one published. And that seems to be really what this comes down to. And it is definitely something that tests your patience.
Oh, yeah. So don't give up. Keep trying. And even, you know, you might find it where you're just writing for yourself. I don't know if there are a lot of people that go to comic cons. And if you go into the authors section, a lot of those people have published their own books and they're doing the marketing themselves.
Right.
Those people are really working hard. So, you know, when you go to a comic con, go check them out.
Yeah.
See if any of their stories are interesting. Maybe pick a book up because you might be opening the door for somebody who's just been doing an uphill battle.
You know, and it's not even just because you can self-publish and stuff, which is different from not so long ago, which helps more people be able to get out there. But I also know that even from a standpoint, there was a gentleman we knew couple of years ago that published three books on a deal from a major publisher, and he still had to market his own stuff, you know?
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
So they helped him with it, but it wasn't like someone just said, okay, the book's done, we're going to market now. So there's a lot that goes into this. And, you know, and to that end, actually, let's go ahead and jump into our interview here. Kay Thompson, she's written a book. She's going to talk about a little bit, and she has a book signing coming up, and, you know, we're talking about marketing. So that kind of fits into here, being able to sell your stuff. And let's come back and we can talk about this a little more. So let's go ahead and jump to our interview. Joining me now, Kay Thompson, author of The Dragon Fantasy. Kay, welcome to User Friendly.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So let's dive right in. Tell us about your book.
My book is called The Dragon Fantasy, and it's a young adult fantasy novel. It's about the relationship between dragons and humans. And the dragons in my book can take on a human form. So therefore, one dragon named Lucian meets a human girl named Donica. They fall in love. They form a really strong bond, a strong relationship. And along the way, they meet a lot of new friends that join them on their journey and everything. They're thrown into this big feud that dragons and humans have been having for over a decade in the story. And it has a lot of hidden secrets behind Donica's past and everything. There's a lot of mystery, comedy, drama, some dark parts in the series, because this is going to be a 4-book series. And there's going to be a spinoff afterwards. So it's a really big, like, huge series. So this first book, The Dragon Fantasy, is the first in the series. So I'm really excited about it.
So I know you kind of gave us a quick interview, but tell us a little bit about the characters and tell us who your favorite character is.
So the character, Lucian, he's the male main character in the story who kind of leads it off in the beginning. And he is basically your average, like, you know, purity, like, type of good character. Like, he is very, like, honest and very, like, pure and stuff. And most dragons in the story have this anger towards humans because of the history they have. And, but Lucian was, like, not like that. He is a very curious type. You know, he really admires humans and everything in the book. My main favorite character in the book is Donica right now, because she is, like, very, like, you know, down to earth and not afraid to, like, put herself out there. She does grow as the series goes and stuff. So, and then there's a lot of other different characters in the book that are kind of quirky and funny, which brings comedy into the book. So, I mean, there's a lot of different characters that I think my readers will really like, but my main favorite character has got to be Donica.
So let's talk about kind of behind the scenes. How long did it take you to write the book?
It took me about 2 years.
Wow. Okay. I mean, it does seem like a lot would have to go into it because and correct me if I'm wrong, but it wouldn't really be just writing. You write it and then you have to edit it. And then I'm sure there's revisions and then you go back and, you know, maybe want to do these type of things different. Did you have to kind of, tell us a little bit about that process. Do you start with an outline or how does that work?
So I started with, getting ideas. So most of my ideas for my books come when I'm asleep. I dream a lot of like interesting stories because, you know, growing up, I was hard of hearing. The whole world was silent to me. So I had to figure out a way to entertain myself. And my imagination is what kept me entertained. That's why I think a lot of my imagination comes when I'm asleep is because like over the years of growing up, I was, you know, watching nothing but fantasy stories or fairy tale stories and stuff. And so that's kind of where I got that, you know, got that skill. This story just came to me in a dream and everything. So, and the process was just like filling in all the gaps and everything. And then I have like a whole notebook of like notes of how the series is going to go and everything. So I never go anywhere without a notebook.
That seems like it was like good advice. Now you have a book signing coming up. Can you tell us a little bit about where, when, you know, what to look for, that kind of thing?
Yeah. So, my book signing is going to be on April 5th from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. at the Chapters Books and Coffee Shop, downtown Newburgh. It is going to be on First Street. It should be a lot of fun. We are also, going to be doing a raffle. Anybody who comes and buys my book and stuff will be automatically entered into the raffle. And there's going to be obviously coffee there and like a lot of other books and a lot of other people. And this is also done during Newburgh's first Friday of the month, which is what they call their art walk. And so a lot of the different stores downtown do a lot of different things and stuff. So that is what I'm going to be doing on April 5th.
All right. Sounds great. And that's a neat little bookstore down there. I know it well. And for anybody, you know, coffee's great, but there's a wonderful ice cream place that's part of the bookstore kind of like right next to it. So it's all worth checking out. Beautiful area to go to, easy parking and all of that. And I think this would be a lot of fun, actually, you know, for people to get to meet you and all of that type of thing. Now, if someone can't make the book signing, how do they buy your book?
So my books are being sold on Amazon for $19.99. And I have a bunch of flyers. Like I have flyers for my book signing as well as introductions to my book at Fred Meyer's on the bulletin board or at Knapp's Thriftway. And I'm also, you know, on social media, you know, posting on there and stuff. So there's a little QR code on one of them and stuff. So you can scan that and stuff and it'll take you directly to my book. That's on Amazon. And yeah, I hope, you know, all my readers and everything, you know, buy my book and, you know, read it because I mean, once the second book going to come out, you're going to want to get the first book. So.
No, absolutely. And for any of our listeners that may have been driving or something and not able to write all that down, we're going to be putting this information on our social media, One User Friendly, and on our website. So you can go ahead and get it from there. So don't crash right now to get it, but it is worth getting the information. And we'll also go ahead and post the QR code so that anybody that can't make it to Newburgh can still get a copy of the book. All right, Kay, is there anything else you want to tell us?
Let me see. I just want to encourage like all those like new authors out there that like keep writing and everything because, you know, it's really important for us to bring out new original stories because it's really hard to like find those original stories because most stories I've seen have been just reruns and remakes and everything. So I like listening in and trying to find those new original stories, because new original stories is what keeps the entertainment business going. So I want to encourage other writers and stuff. And then if they want, you know, reach out to me, because I do have my social media and everything. So if they could reach out to me and stuff, so I like to always connect with new authors and everything. So that's all I need to say.
Well, go ahead and give us your social media again.
My social media is, I got Instagram, I got Facebook, I got Twitter. I also have an email, and it is basically, my email is my first name, k.thompson@yahoo.com.
All right, great. Okay, thank you, and the best of luck. I'm planning to be there at the book signing, so I'll stop by and say hi, and we'll go from there. This is really exciting.
Thank you. Thank you. I look forward to having you there.
Alrighty. So we'll definitely get out in our social media the information and the QR code that we referenced in the interview. But I don't know. At the end of the day, I really hope that everybody that has the creative gene, which I do not, that writes to keep with it. Because, you know, perseverance, you will most likely eventually get there. It just takes, I don't know, patience. I said it before. But Gretchen, Bill, do you have anything else you want to just kind of close on writing?
No,
you know, Bill, I would imagine this probably goes into the artwork field too, as well as, I don't know how, do artists get their, and I'm sure there's a lot of people who are going to laugh at me even asking a question like this, but do artists get their pictures published, or how does that work?
You can get art books and stuff done, where it's just a collection of your works. I'm not entirely sure how the process of that goes through. Usually, within certain markets at certain areas, I'm sure it's hard to get into very specific ones unless you're a well-known artist. But in smaller niche communities, it's probably a lot easier if there's those kind of publishers. Because a lot of artists that I follow, they do that. As part of their,
you know, and I know you can get supporters and commissions. We talked about that last week even, but yeah, it just seems like it's definitely a journey, but one that can be won. So anyway, all right, well, we'll keep you up to date on what's going on with all of this too from Gretchen Cyberhawk, and definitely anybody out there that's writing, let us know what you've been through. Love to hear about it and maybe get some ideas for others out there that might be feeling a little bit frustrated with the process. So best of luck to everybody, and I'm glad. Please keep writing. All right, another area here we just wanted to touch upon for a few minutes is wearable technology. A lot of questions have been coming in about this. And, you know, it's interesting. We've discussed this a number of times on the show, I know, and it seems like these things keep developing, and they're kind of fun, and some are good, and some are a little bit of a kitsch. So it just depends on, you know, what different people are doing and what you would want to find out. But one of the areas that has really been affected by this and continues to be is quality of life and healthcare. And there are devices, we've had smartwatches for a while where you can get certain health statistics. And as the manufacturers say, that doesn't replace a doctor, but it certainly will give you the ability to maybe keep track of things a little bit better than other items might have without that in the past, where you would have had to have gone to a doctor every time to get an update. But some of the other devices that are out there are looking to be a little bit of game changers. One such product that I thought was really kind of cool was GyroGlove. And this is something it's something that's targeted at people suffering from Parkinson's.
Oh, that makes sense.
The glove will actually let you get some of your independence back. And one of the persons interviewed on this that has tremors, a person with Parkinson's, says with the glove, she can make herself a cup of tea, button her shirt, eat something using utensils with the glove. So,
okay, that's awesome.
You know, this is just an example of where technology can really take you in a direction that it wouldn't have been otherwise. And for anybody that doesn't like the smart watches, but wants some of those type of features, there's smart rings and other things that you can wear that are very non-invasive. And some of the other things too, is for people that have, you know, blood sugar, diabetes, these type of things, you can actually get an implant and you can monitor your blood sugar without having to prick your finger. You know, devices like that exist that certainly can make life a lot easier. So, you know, it's interesting to see these things come along. And then the whole other side of it, there's a lot of things that might be kind of fun, but aren't quite as necessary. And there's a lot of things that are kind of like, what is that for? A while back, we were talking about smart toothbrushes, not technically a wearable, but one of these kind of devices that, you know, it just seems like, okay, I don't know how beneficial that would be. And I already feel like I've spent enough on my Sonicare.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know. Other wearable things are tactile feedback devices, which are going to be kind of interesting. If you've ever seen the movie Ready Player One, some of that stuff's starting to become a reality. Let's see if we can try some of those things out. And the other thing is increasing quality on stuff that's been out there. So I'm somebody that my hearing's good, but I have a very hard time with these in-the-ear headphones. Over the ear is fine, but the little Bluetooth ones that sit, I can't make them out. I don't know why. I just can't hear them. And I've had my hearing tested and everything like that and been fine, but they're making a lot of other products like that where these things are getting better. Or there are other headphones that are coming onto the market that don't have, at least I don't want to say don't have the issue, because the devices out there work for a lot of people, I know. But for those of us that don't seem to be compatible with them for some reason, they're doing some other things. And I guess where that's going is the idea of selection and choice. So whereas a few years ago, it was just, you know, this was what we had. And now there's all kinds of different things. I still remember back when I got my first smartwatch, which was a Samsung. I really liked it. One of the features I liked on it was that you could do a call through your watch. Of course, in those days, you had to have the phone to make it work. Well, they've got those out now where you don't have to have a phone anymore. It actually can just work on its own. It takes a SIM card or an eSIM. You have to get an account for it, but it will run and work just fine. So, you know, again, that's kind of where we're seeing some upgrades and some things like that. I think a little bit later in the year, we're going to get into some more specifics on wearable technology and just some of the things out there that are coming out this year. But basically, everything that we have right now is stuff we saw at CES. And, you know, we've talked about that a little bit, but some of these medical things, I think, really are something that will improve quality of life and is something that is just, you know, just something that's going to be out there that all of us can use. All right, next segment of the show, we're going to be talking AI again. Bob Lament with Static Radio, and got an interesting perspective on that and some other things, technology. So don't go away. This is User Friendly 2.0. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. Joining us now, Bob Lament with Static Radio. Joining me now is Bob Lament with Static Radio. Bob, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
It's going to be great. So, you know, let's just dive right in here to some of the technology. And AI is a topic that is really been on the forefront. We've talked about it here on User Friendly, and it's been talked about just everywhere else. So yeah,
people can't shut up about it. They have AIs talking about AI. You know what I mean? They got them talking to each other.
That's where it's headed. I'll tell you. And actually, that's what's happened in many ways. And, you know, there's a lot of concerns. We've been talking about this on User Friendly, too, from our listeners about what AI is doing. There's a very positive side to all of this, but there's also a concern about jobs and all that kind of stuff. So let's start there. What is your feeling on AI? And where do you, 10,000 foot view stuff, where do you think we're headed?
Oh, my. Yeah, that's a good question. The I think, you know, there's always concern about jobs. So, you know, it's going to happen. We got to get through it. That's the rough patch. I think the kind of the big picture is that it's going to, in the best of worlds, it's going to take away kind of the grunt work that people have to do, the stuff that really isn't suited for people to constantly do and maintain, you know, a healthy mental state. And I think that's probably what's going to happen mostly. Obviously, there's a lot of bad things that could happen. And we can get into those if you want to. But I think it really is going to kind of take away all the fluffy, you know, kind of crappy work that a lot of folks are doing, especially, you know, in various industries. I mean, the bad part, I think, is a lot of it's been used right now for writing and reporting and so forth. And yes, that kind of is negative for folks who are in journalists, I suppose. But I mean, do you really want to do the county board meeting? I mean, is that really what you want to spend your life doing? Don't you want to write something better? The issue is that they need to not just, you know, free up people from doing the grunt work, but then enable them to do something that's a little bit more interesting and you know, keyed to the to a human, you know, a human factor. I think that's what nobody's thinking about right now. They're all thinking, oh, I could save money. I was just reading literally while I was waiting to come on here. Google has sold their AI to publishers to write news articles. I don't know if you saw that. It was in on Engadget. I was just reading about it just now, and it's like, and they're like, and then you know, the Engadget's like, well, I don't know if that's such a good idea. What's going to happen? But the other problem is AI's got to come from somewhere, right? They pull all this data together and then spit it back out, right? Well, somebody's got to feed, you know, feed the hay to the horse so it can make the poop. And so
this is very, who's this is do very that? True. You know what? One of the things about journalism that's interesting, and you hit upon that with Google's announcement this week, is that what they want to do, at least from my understanding, is actually have a situation where an AI could find the news, write the article, even maybe report on it in a video medium, mm-hmm. and get it out there without there ever being a reporter involved. And mm-hmm. one of the issues that's been brought up in the past is the fact that AI generally is not able to differentiate between fact and fiction. And we've seen some of this
right,
in some yeah. of the past things that have come out. So I think that right there could already be a problem going down that road.
Yeah, but the other thing is that you're going to eventually, depending on how good it is, you're going to lose audience, right? Who's going to eventually people are going to decipher what's been written and what's been, you know, created via this mechanism, unless it gets really good, and they're just going to pass it on by. So that's going to be one of those issues. And then also when you get inundated at a certain point, there's a saturation point where humans, we just can't take anymore, right? So what's going to happen, I think, is it's going to drive people to more trusted source kind of a situation. So they're not going to just read any old crap, which is what we've been doing on the internet for decades, you know. They're going to say,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm not going to read everything. I'm just going to read from, you know, Bill at User Friendly because I know he wrote that. And it's going to push brand more to the front, I think, over time.
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely spot on that. People will have sources they trust, and that's going to become a lot more of a thing than it has been in the past. Because, you know, one of the big issues even before AI was this kind of thing was just somebody would see a headline, wouldn't read the article and share it on social media or whatever. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden something starts circulating, which may or may not be accurate or may not be even what the original person intended to share. And now we have a situation where you might have articles written that you're not sure if they're accurate. The other side of this is the visual medium. You can create pictures and all mm-hmm. kinds of other things. And for the most part, from what I found with that is if you do look at something, you can see artifacting, you can probably make mm-hmm. it out. But if you aren't looking at it for that reason or just quickly sharing something, then that definitely could get out there and start to become, you know, more and more of a problem.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they, the last election cycle and the one before that, fake news, right? That's all. We're going to be living in fake news. We're going to be inundated with fake news because once you have these tools, you're going to use them and people are going to use them for good to get, you know, the local baseball scores out there or something. And people are going to use them for bad to propagate, you know, things against their political enemies and, you know, whatever. I mean, I think the worst part is going to be marketing. If there's not been enough things shoved down your throat, wait till Coca-Cola has AI and every 2 seconds, you're seeing something about how great Coca-Cola is. And it's just being generated and regenerated and regenerated. And so, you know, eventually I think it's just going to, you know, going to pop. That's the way it always does, right? But the problem is, you know, what kind of damage is done by the time that happens? And, you know, who believes what? I mean, I always like to think that people aren't as gullible, but well,
sorry, just had a little thing in my throat there.
Yeah, but I run into it, right? And as positive as your outlook can be, the reality sneaks in, and then people all, you know, go whatever way, you know. Bill, I'm going to take a guess here. So I don't want you to fill up on it. When I was a kid, there was a thing about Hubba Bubba bubble gum having spiders' eggs in it. Do you remember this at all?
I remember this very well.
Okay. So there's no social media. Me too. But there's no social media. There's no internet. There's none of this. And every kid in, you know, school knew the Hubba Bubba spider egg thing. Right. And I'm kind of taking people back a little bit, but I just want, you know, as an example of how these things can be so pervasive. Now, can you imagine if you have a machine working on something nonstop? That was just a bunch of kids.
Yeah. That's so.
So what's a machine, you know, churning something 24 hours a day, 7 days a week? How pervasive are these things going to be if there was an actual, you know, concerted effort by somebody? Not to mention,
now we've been talking
security, but
to
that's
the
a
negative
whole
of this going on with that. Yeah, and like I said, we've been talking to the negative of this, but on that theme, AI does have a very positive side of it too when you use it in the right way.
Mm-hmm.
And you're mentioning, you know, having a system that's able to work on something 24/7. We're seeing things in the medical world and others, James Webb Telescope stuff that is because of that. Stuff that we wouldn't have had access to. So on that theme, where do you think we're headed? Do you see AI helping humanity?
Oh yeah. So on that, the thing about AI, and I don't know that I've read this too many places and everything, but it's what I talk about. I wouldn't necessarily call it AI as much as I would call it stamina, because you and I can't sit there and grind on something for, you know, weeks at a time without a break, right? But this can. And I mean, literally, you just give it data and it'll just grind on that data and it'll find that little nugget of, you know, wonderfulness in a mountain of data over a shorter amount of time, because it can just sit there and do it and do it and do it. We should call it stamina. You know what I mean? It's just got stamina. The intelligence part of it is overinflated, I think, sometimes, because people love to think that computers are so smart, but computers aren't that smart, right? They just do what they're told. So anyway, but I think that it's going to, the effect is going to be that if we can gather the data, then it can solve the problem. So it can just work on something like, let's say, you know, data sets for medical purposes, which you brought up. So let's say it's going to look at all of these different studies on cancer cells. All right. And there's a similarity in there somewhere of why these things affect people in certain ways, right? Whatever cancer you want to talk about, right? Colon cancer, whatever. And they're going to throw a mountain of data at it, and it's going to spit out that nugget that's going to say, ah, here's how we deal with this. Because it can. It can just work on it like that. Whereas, you know, you put a bunch of graduate students in a room and they'll never come up with that thing because they get tired, right? They get tired of the grind. This won't. And it'll map the galaxies. It'll map, you know, stars. It'll map isotopes. Whatever you throw at it, it's going to do something with that over a certain amount of time. And maybe it'll be a negative. You know, there's no way you're going to get out of this, but at least you'll get something of an answer, because it's just going to grind on that until it gets something. That's the positive.
And it seems like from that, it's taking the step where the expert can now focus on other stuff than trying to deal with a data set, but they've got the information from the data set. And again, I think it's important to put this out, because a lot of the coverage on, you know, this type of AI has been very, very on the what it's going to screw everything up. But there's the whole world, which I think is more of what kind of advantages this can create. And in some of the things you're talking about, data sets are a big deal. The medical area is just one on the top of my head, why I keep bringing it up, because there have been some
actuary kind of stuff, traffic patterns. I mean, you could literally, if you could set it up, you could feed it and say, here's where all the traffic accidents happen. Let's do something about this. Right. I think the hard part for everybody is, and I don't want to be back on the negative for a second, but is somebody's got to make the decision to do it. And then once they get a result, they have to make a decision to fix it. And those are all human, human interactions at that point. So far it seems like the press and so far is all the get rich quick schemes on how you can use AI to make yourself money and do nothing. But really it should be, how can we use AI to make our world better and free up the minds of people who can think of the next thing, as opposed to have them, you know, working on these problems that are easily done by this system. And we have to get to that point yet. I don't think we're there yet, and I don't know when we'll get there, but I'm hoping, you know, it'll be accelerated and we'll get there within the next decade or something. But, you know, can you imagine I've always said, and I'm going to jump a little on topic here, self-driving cars. We have the technology to make cars drive themselves. The issue is not making the car drive itself. The issue is the randomness of the world so that that car doesn't have, has a zero chance of an accident. And they've already got really good percentages on that, right? You hear about the ones that do have an accident because all these self-driving cars, they're just going nuts out on the road and running over people. But I mean, there's only a handful of stories where this comes to light, right? And they have had these cars running for years now. This is not new. And the problem, though, is that we don't have a system in place to know where the problem areas are. So if these cars knew that, you know, four-way stops, you have to take more caution, right? All four-way stops are, you know, the worst thing in the world, and you have to be really, really careful. Then it would reduce that very small accident rate even lower to almost zero. And we could have that, right? I think it is possible to do that. I mean, this is something that's possible now. If we can kind of eliminate that, because that's what everybody's concerned about. I don't want to be in a car that wrecks and I have no control over it, right? As if we're much better at driving than the systems that they have in existence already, you know? So, but that's the interesting thing about AI is that if we can get over our fear, then I think there is better things in the future. If we can kind of control the aspects of the negative, kind of like, you know, the hacking stuff, right? I'm a blank on his name now. Who's the famous guy? Oh, gosh. I had his name in my head and it jumped out.
Ask me a question like that, you know?
I'm sorry. He was famous for, they were so worried about him getting the nuclear codes, they put Kevin Mitnick. Kevin Mitnick was engineer. Yeah, yeah. Sorry, it took me a minute to pull his name out of my head. So Kevin Mitnick was considered a hacker way back in the day, like I think it was the late 80s even, before there really was the networks that we have today. And they were so fearful of him, they put him in jail because they thought he could get the nuclear codes. But he wasn't hacking in the sense that we know hacking now. He was a social engineer. He would befriend people and get into the phone company and then do what he wanted to do. But he couldn't do anything outside the phone company facilities on his own. He had to have access and get himself access. And he did that through being a social engineer. And, but they were worried about that. Well, now guess what? We have AI and it could do all kinds of this. It's way worse than Kevin Mitnick ever was. And yet we're not, you know, people don't even clue into that part. I don't think. I'm trying to remember where I was going with this, but anyway, I was just trying to go with the fact that.
No, I think actually that makes sense because, you know, going down to what's possible and where this can go. And I'm going to ask you another question here because we have a lot of concern about this type of thing. You know, in sci-fi and all of this brings AI and all of these dudes going down the road of something like, you know, the Terminator is going to take over the world or the nuclear codes, like you just talked about, but you would have to be dealing with something sentient, I would think, for that. And do you think we're ever going to end up in a situation like that? Or do you think people are maybe just overreacting because of what they've seen in the movies?
Oh, totally overreacting. Totally overreacting. I mean, I think that there, you know, are, examples throughout history where these things have kind of happened and then they get overblown, like the Mitnick story. But you know, I do see that there's actually more of a worry that people are going to use AI to get your credit card number than they are to get the codes to launch anything. Because that's not, you know, everybody's not Dr. Evil out in the world. You know what I mean? Most of them just want to live an easy life and take everybody else's money so they can have a better existence. Right. You're common thief and so forth.
Absolutely. Dr. Evil would be a lot more work, you know?
Right. Exactly. So much more work. And yeah. And then, you know, it's just a hassle. You know what I mean? It's much better to, you know, prey on the average, you know, citizen and get $20 out of them than it is to take over the world. Because, you know, we don't even can agree on anything now. Can you imagine if somebody was, you know, trying to do that's like herding cats or something?
Oh my goodness. Even worse. I don't think I'd want to run the world. So, hey, I'm going to jump topics on you here. Tell us about static radio.
Oh, you don't want to hear about that. Well, we're trying to take over the world. We've built this AI. No, I'm just joking.
Hey, it was a great, you know, great transition, right?
What are we doing today, Pinky? Or Brain?
We're trying to take brain, over brain, yeah. Yes. What are we doing, Brain? I can't do the voice. Brain? Oh, yeah.
Trying to take over the world, Pinky. So Static Radio is just a show that I've done with my co-host, Miles Tidal. We started it a long time ago, pre-podcasting, and have done it on a weekly basis ever since. And we basically tell stories each week. Either one or both of us tell a story about something that's happened. Typically, it's either funny or it's strange. Just as an example, this week Miles told a story about going for a hike on a nature trail and running into a dominatrix. So that's strange, and it was kind of
okay.
Funny.
That would be that would not maybe a deer or something. I wouldn't expect that.
It wasn't planned. So, it wasn't like he was meeting them. He set up something. This is random.
Just random. Okay, now I'm going to have to listen to this episode just out of curiosity. We'll keep this family friendly, but check that out. Staticradio.com, yeah. I know, is your website. And so, we're getting to the end of our time here, but I'm going to just talk about this because we're in the same thing. You were saying that you started pre-podcast, and so did we. So on a very different topic, how has this changed for you? I mean, I know I can answer that for us as an on-air show, and we still are on the radio, but boy, has the industry changed. What are you thinking? Tell us a little bit about that background.
Well, it's changed dramatically. So when we started, there was like nobody. I was trying to find people who were producing audio for the internet we started in January 1999 doing a show, and we've done it every week. And then, you know, podcasting came around 2004. So all those years I was trying to find people, and I found a handful of people doing that. But since then, the first wave of podcasting, not much of a change, to be honest with you, just more people. Now, since 2020-ish, explosion. There's so many tools, like we're using this Riverside FM. There's so many tools that are geared toward it. There are so many, you mentioned the guesting websites and so forth. It's just amazing how it's exploded with everything that's happened. And it's so... In a way, it's so much easier. It really, if you wanted to make an analogy to AI, It's like AI took over podcasting and just made it go much further than I think anybody ever thought it would. Because I always joke that I knew podcasting was something, because my wife, I think it was in 2015, I was looking on our bill and there was a charge on Apple for a podcast, access to a podcast. And I asked my wife about it and she's like, well, I want to pay to listen to this, you know, get this extra content or whatever. And I'm like, what? Because she never even talks about it. I've been doing this for, you know, at this point, probably 15 years, no interest whatsoever. And then now all of a sudden it's important because this, it was one of those serial killer shows came out and she's like, I want to listen to this, so I'm going to pay. And I've been doing this for 15 years, you know? And she's like, oh yeah, I knew that, but this is way more interesting. And so that was
I don't know what to say about that, but yeah, hey, but I hear you. It's like all of a sudden we've seen the same type of thing too, where it's gone from, we have more listeners on the podcast than we do on air now by a lot.
Oh yeah.
And that's in the last 2 years, you know? So,
I did college radio, and yeah, you're right. So the if you want to talk about the difference between over the air, right, and online, I mean, we've made the transition. This, I don't know if you, maybe I wasn't paying attention last year, but I noticed this year that I could watch the Super Bowl as a streaming on streaming, right? It was, I can't remember what service it was on, but I could watch it on the air or I could watch it streaming. This has been happening with media across the board. We have made the flip to where over the air is, you know, second and streaming is first. So podcasting is first. Streaming live events now is first. All that is first as opposed to being second, when before over the air was kind of the primary right now. It's taken a little while, but I think, as we've gone on, I think the flip has happened over the last few years. And I just kind of was paying attention more this year to see that. The other thing is my son was, where I live at in St. Louis, Missouri, there's a Spanish language station and they get more people listening on their stream than they do on their over the air. And because he did an article for his school newspaper on their station, and I was surprised to see that, right? So I was surprised to see, because, you know, it's kind of a niche broadcasting, right? All in Spanish and everything, but they get way more traction out of their online streaming than they do over the air. The over the air part is, I guess, where they've been for a while, and then now they're pushing in this other direction. They keep both because they've already got it, I guess. But
that's been the, you know, same thing here too. We do both, but speaking of which, we still have to fit into the time for the on air. So, Bob, I thank you so much for joining us today. This has been a great interview, and again, check out Static Radio, staticradio.com, Static Radio on most socials.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Bill. Take care.
Until next week, this is User Friendly 2.0, keeping you safe on the cutting edge.
User Friendly 2.0 is copyright 2013 to 2024 by User Friendly Media Group Incorporated. All rights reserved. Opinions expressed on the show are those of the hosts and guests and not this radio station. Please check out userfriendly.show for airtimes and podcasts.